and each scorching throb of Nikolai's scar served as a reminder that Renata's life was at risk. How could Pasha do this? It was bad enough that Nikolai and Vika might die, but to add Renata and Ludmila, it was as if Pasha's goodness had died when the Tsar and Tsarina did. Or maybe Nikolai had killed it by betraying him. Nikolai clutched the street lamp tighter, although this time it was as much from shame as from the pain of his scar. Finally, the searing at his collarbone eased a bit, and although he was still sick with guilt, Nikolai released his grip on the street lamp. But there was no relief, for at that moment the stench of decay washed over him. He reached for his handkerchief and covered his nose.
"My apologies,"
a cloaked woman said as she crossed a small bridge over the nearby canal and approached him.
"I need to speak with you, Enchanter. Would you be able to cast a shield around yourself, or around me, to block the unpleasant smell, so that we may have a conversation?"
Nikolai started to respond, but instead gagged into his handkerchief. It was as if the rot were crawling into his mouth. He waved his hand in front of the woman and formed an invisible bubble around her to contain the odor, not so much because of her request, but out of self-preservation. Only when he could breathe again did he register that this stranger had known he was an enchanter, and that, damn it, he had just performed magic in front of her without question. She had not even flinched.
"Thank you, Nikolai."
He took several steps away. "How do you know my name?"
"I know many things about you. Perhaps even some you do not know yourself. Will you walk with me? I promise you are safe."
"Tell me who you are."
"I will. That I also promise. But first, would you like to know who your father was?"
"My father?" Nikolai took a tentative step toward the woman. She began to hobble down the street.
"You inherited from your father not only his broad shoulders and confidence, but also his adaptability. Despite his many flaws, he was quite skilled at adjusting himself to thrive through change. He would not have survived the war with Napoleon and all the other upheavals without it."
"I knew he was a soldier, but that is all that I knew." The woman laughed, although it was more a shrill screech than a joyous chuckle. Nikolai cringed.
"Your father was no mere soldier. He was a leader of men. Your father was the Tsar."
Nikolai stopped in the middle of the street, in front of a small church.
"Pardon? You heard me right. Your friend, the Cesarevich, is your half-brother."
"That's impossible."
"Is it? I think I ought to know. The Tsar took me as his mistress during a month-long visit to his army on the steppe. I was young and beautiful then, and we spent every night in his tent. 8 months after he left, I bore him a son, whom I named Nikolai."
"No!" Every muscle in Nikolai's body tensed. It had to be a lie. What game was this old hag playing at?
"Oh, yes."
She paused in front of the church's wooden doors, as if for dramatic effect.
"In fact, since you are a year older than the Cesarevich, you could contend his right to be the next Tsar. It's rumored the Tsarina had her own affairs as well, And it is reasonable to doubt whether the Tsar was Pasha's father. You could be Tsar, my darling. I've already been busy spreading gossip about the possibility around the city.
Nikolai clenched his fists. Then he snatched the invisible edge of the bubble surrounding the woman. He knew precisely where the edge was, for he had created it, and yanked her into the church. It was empty at this hour. He slammed her into the pews. She cackled.
You could be arrested for treason,
he whispered furiously.
I could be arrested for treason, simply for walking and talking with you. How dare you spew these lies?
The woman straightened her cloak and adjusted the hood over her head. Being hurled into the pew seemed to have had little impact on her.
I don't know how you came to know my identity as an enchanter, but I could chain you to this bench for eternity if I so desired. I have no doubt. But you wouldn't do that to your mother, would you? I have no mother. She died when I was born. I almost died. But I resurrected myself.
The woman lifted the hood and let it fall to her shoulders. Nikolai stumbled backward into another pew across the aisle. The woman looked as horrid as she had smelled before he contained her stench in the bubble. Her skin was yellowed and mummified in places, grey and sagging in others. Only her eyes glowed, wild with savagery.
God forgive me, Nikolai thought. I've let the devil into your sanctuary. It is truly I. My name is Aijana Karimova, and I was a faith healer on the steppe. The village thought I had died, but I actually lay in anti-death, the amorphous space between life and death. It took 18 years, but I healed myself, leeching energy from the worms and maggots that squirmed over me. And when I emerged from anti-death, I went in search of the only thing that mattered. You.
Nikolai clutched a book of Psalms that had been left in his pew.
It is not possible to rise from death.
Aijana sighed, and all her audacity fell away.
It is when you are motivated by love.
She frowned, or what would have been a frown, at the muscles of her face worked as they were supposed to, rather than pulling taut in some places and hanging loose in others.
But, my dear, why should you not believe in anti-death, simply because you did not know it exists? Healing is the business of transferring energy. Resurrection is healing, but more ambitious. And there is nothing too ambitious for a mother separated from her son.
Nikolai remained in his pew, but his grip on the Book of Psalms eased, just a fraction. It was nonsense what she spoke of. And yet, it seemed possible that there could be a kernel of truth. Perhaps even more than a kernel. She inched closer and opened her arms, as if to embrace him.
Stay back!
Her entire body slumped, but she did not try to advance farther.
I have been in the city a while now, but I did not feel worthy of you, Nikolai. I failed to protect you, and protection was my job as your mother. I could not face you until I felt I had been redeemed.
Her face drooped. The skin near her mouth looked as if it might fall off her chin. It was a ghoul's rendition of regret.
And are you redeemed now?
Her eyes brightened.
I am. How?
Now the skin near her mouth tightened, and she bared her rotten jaw in a monstrous, gap-toothed smile.
The villagers who neglected you have been punished. When I find Galina Zakrevskaya, she will feel my wrath as well. And the Tsar, let us simply say his death was not accidental.
Nikolai clung to the psalter again.
You killed the Tsar. Believe me, he did not deserve to live.
And the Tsarina?
Nikolai's voice was hardly audible.
She died of natural causes. She meant nothing to me.
If Nikolai hadn't already been sitting, he would have buckled onto the floor. His mother had come back from the dead, and she had murdered the Tsar, who she claimed was his father. He summoned the power to rise from the pew.
You may have been my mother in your past life, but not in your current reincarnation.
Aijana's shriveled lips twisted with a sob.
But
the bubble I've cast around you will remain to spare others from your fetter. But please leave St. Petersburg. I do not wish your presence here.
Nikolai,
she whimpered. She attempted to stand. She fell back into the pew.
I have charmed you to the bench. The spell will wear off in a few hours. Meanwhile, it may do you good to spend some time in this holy place. To think about what you've done.
No, my son! I did everything for you. I love you, Nikolai.
But he strode out of the church without looking back. He had a mother who was a demon of the dead. He had a father who was actually dead. And he had a duel tomorrow, at the end of which either he or Vika would be dead. Again, Renata's tea leaves were correct. Nikolai was born of death, and death would always follow him. The only question that remained was, would he also help usher in death? Chapter 65. In the evening, Vika woke in her bed on Ovchinen Island, with her eyes nearly glued together from salt crust, and her mouth pasty and dry. Her flat in St. Petersburg had been too quiet without Ludmila, and the city too big and impersonal. Vika had needed stillness and familiarity to sort through her thoughts, so she'd come home. And cried, and cried. It was worse than after she'd first learned of Sergei's death. Then she'd been sad, but she'd also been furious. She'd been upset that he lied to her about her mother, and that he never dispelled her delusion that he was her real father. Her grief had been diluted by her sense of betrayal. It had taken time to come to terms with his untruths, and to understand that whether or not he was her biological father, he had cared for her and taught her everything he knew, and he'd been her father in everything but name. However, unlike the letter about Sergei's death, Galina's accusation that Vika had been the one who took his life hit Vika directly. There was no one else to blame. And so she cried. But now she scraped the salt from her eyes.
It wasn't my fault, Vika realized. I couldn't have known and couldn't have stopped what happened.
Sergei had never taught her it was possible to channel energy as he had done. And it must have been his plan that when the game began, he would sacrifice himself, if he had to, in order to help her.
Oh, Father.
With this understanding, Vika rose from bed and cobbled together supper from the tins of fish in the cupboard and some old beets from the garden. Then she dived into her last few hours before the duel. She did little in preparation for the duel itself. She figured that what she already knew would have to suffice. There was little else she could learn in these final hours. Besides, she wanted to save her strength. Vika also had no inkling of what to expect from Nikolai. In fact, she had no clue about what to expect from herself. If he attacked, she would react. If he didn't, well, she did not know. What Vika did do was tidy up the loose ends of her life. She made a list of all her valuables. There weren't many, but the contents of the chest buried under the valerian root, father's hiding spot, would be enough to last a comfortable lifetime, and left instructions that they were to go to Ludmila in the event Vika died. She also composed a letter to Ludmila, and charmed both the list and the letter to self-destruct should Vika survive the game, and to find their way to Ludmila if she did not. After she'd run out of chores, Vika hiked into the forest to say goodbye to her long-time refuge. She climbed over icy logs and pushed her way through snow-covered shrubs until she reached Preobrazhensky Creek. It was frozen over, but she could still imagine its soft burbling, the fish glistening silver beneath its surface, and the frogs croaking their deep, vibrating songs on midsummer nights.
"Farewell,"
she whispered, and the wind between the trees stirred and carried her message through the woods. Vika sat on a boulder on the creek's bank and touched the basalt pendant at her neck. Sergei had made her promise, long before the game began, to remain his little Vikochka, no matter what the future would bring. Had she done that? Had she played the game in a way that would have made Sergei proud? Or had she changed too much and lost herself?
"It would have been impossible not to change," Vika whispered.
And as soon as she said it, she knew it was true, and she accepted it. But she didn't know if she would be able to accept becoming an outright murderer. She sat in the forest for a long time, until the winter cold truly set in, and even the branches shivered. She rose from her rock to leave, perhaps forever.
"Goodbye, my island. Thank you for everything."
If she'd had any tears left, she might have wept. As Vika returned to her cottage, the full moon glowed red in the sky. She thought of a saying Sergei had taught her when she was young. "White moon, angel moon. Blood moon, demon moon." She made haste and hurried inside. At the stroke of midnight, as the calendar shifted to the date of the duel, a wolf howled at the red-black sky. It sounded like a funeral dirge. Chapter 66. The duel would begin as soon as the sun rose. Pasha crawled across his bedroom and threw up in a vase. He would not allow himself to get up from the floor. Chapter 67. At 6 o'clock in the morning, Nikolai stood on the banks of the Neva and looked out across the dark bay. In the distance, his lanterns lit up the island, but he knew there was no one there, for Pasha had declared it closed. Of course, if Nikolai had wanted to step foot on the island yesterday, he could have found a way. But he hadn't wanted to. Why visit the execution block where he might be scheduled to die? Today, however, he had no choice. With one last glance over his shoulder, a farewell to the city he loved, Nikolai conjured a pair of skates and allowed them to carry him over the ice. It was a simple charm, one that wouldn't take too much from him before the duel commenced, and it would give him a few more moments of peace. The calm was interrupted, though, by his scar, which scalded Nikolai's skin so unbearably, he clutched at his collarbone and his knees almost gave out. If Nikolai's skates hadn't been charmed, he would not have been able to continue across the frozen bay. So many times yesterday, he had thought of taking his turn in the game, simply to alleviate the pain of the wands on his skin. And yet, he had refrained, for it was his fifth and final move, he could not waste it. So he had had to bear the scar's searing. He nearly crashed into the granite shore of the island. It had appeared too quickly. Perhaps his skates had glided faster than he anticipated. Perhaps he'd lost himself a little in the scorching wands. Or perhaps time had accelerated, the way it sometimes does when something dreadful is on the horizon. Regardless, Nikolai was at the island. The game was upon him once again. He clambered up the dock and changed his skates back into boots. He double-checked inside his coat that he had the knife Galina had given him, and then he began to walk straight to the center of the island. Here the leaves were still green, and the birds still sang in warm comfort, despite the winter that swirled in the bay and the river around it. The island was oblivious to its unhappy destiny. Nikolai didn't know where exactly to go, but the main promenade seemed an appropriate choice, the kind of field of honor typically found in duels. It was shielded from view from the embankments of St. Petersburg to give them privacy from nosy onlookers. There was enough space for the enchanters to fight, and it was tragically beautiful, a cruel and perfect place for one of them to die. Pasha wanted them to fight a classic duel, but there was nothing classic about it. There would be no seconds to check Nikolai's and Vika's weapons, for how could anyone check a weapon he cannot see? And there would be no attempt at reconciliation, for the duel was not instigated at Vika's or Nikolai's request. There would be no counting of paces, because Nikolai did not intend to shoot at Vika with a pistol. And there would be no witnesses. Or would there be? Nikolai quickened his pace. Was it possible that Pasha intended to witness the grand finale? It seemed unlikely. But with this new version of Pasha, Nikolai could not be sure. As Nikolai turned onto the promenade, he stumbled. There, among the flowers and the oaks, stood two iron cages. Renata and Ludmila were inside. Nikolai ran.
Renata! Madame Fanina! Are you all right?
Ludmila stretched from where she had been asleep on the ground. Renata, however, had been standing with her forehead pressed against the bars. She jumped at the sound of his voice.
Nikolai! What has Pasha done?
Renata shook her head.
Not the Cesarevich. His sister. She's the one driving his decisions. She wants an imperial enchanter for him.
Damn it, Yuliana,
Nikolai muttered.
What?
Renata pressed against the bars.
Never mind. It's not important right now. I need to get you two out.
He raised his arm.
No, stop! Save your energy.
I don't want you locked up like animals.
The Grand Princess promised our safety if we remained in the cages.
But why?
Oh.
Nikolai sagged against the bars.
She means to remind us to finish the game quickly.
Renata cast her eyes downward and nodded. Ludmila pulled herself up from the floor of her cell.
We will not try to watch you fight. Think only of the silver lining. With us here, we are at least able to say goodbye.
Goodbye?
Nikolai shook his head.
Yes,
Ludmila said.
Goodbye. Just in case.
At this, Renata took Nikolai's face in her hands and touched their foreheads together in the space between the bars.
Nikolai. Oh, Renata. Don't say it.
But he had to. After all she had done for him.
You've been the best companion I could have hoped for on this strange journey. I could never thank you enough. Take care of Galina, all right? And if there's anything in my room that you want, stop.
She shook her head against his.
I refuse to say goodbye, and I will not say good luck either.
for there is neither good nor luck in this duel."
Nikolai nodded. She was, as she often was, right. Even in these last minutes.
"But I can't let you leave without this. I have said it before, and now I say it again. I love you. I loved you even before I knew of your magic, Nikolai. And I have loved you ever since. And I will continue to love you, no matter what you choose to do."
She leaned forward and pressed her mouth against his. Her lips parted, and there was such soft courage in her gesture, his lips parted too. She lingered, but eventually she pulled away. She caressed his cheek, and then she whispered one more time,
"I love you. Now go, and don't forget to be you."
Chapter 68. Vika arrived on an ice sleigh as the sun rose over the frozen horizon. She made her way toward the center of the island. It seemed the right place to start. And stepped onto the promenade, just in time to see Nikolai kiss Renata. Vika stopped mid-stride. It took another moment for Vika to realize that next to where Renata and Nikolai gazed at each other, Ludmila stood locked in a cage. In fact, Vika had been so fixated on Renata's and Nikolai's lips, she hadn't noticed that Renata, too, was imprisoned.
"Ludmila!"
Vika flew to the bars. Nikolai leaped back from Renata's cell.
"Vika! You're here."
She ignored him.
"Ludmila! Who did this? I have to set you free."
"Hush, sunshine."
Ludmila stretched through the bars and patted Vika's arm.
"Leave me be. The Grand Princess guaranteed our release at the conclusion of the duel.
But you..."
"I'm fine. You must play the game."
Vika shook the bars. But then her arms gave out, and she pressed against the cage.
"I'm sorry I never told you about the game, Ludmila. I didn't want you to worry."
"I understand. I would have done the same. I'm even sorrier that you were swept up in it. No need for apologies, dear. Besides, there is no time."
Ludmila pointed behind Vika.
"The sun is rising."
Vika glanced over her shoulder. The sky had turned reddish-orange, like a reverse image of the blood moon from the night. And with the sun hanging above the frozen water, the duel had officially begun. It was Nikolai's move. Vika whirled around and pressed her back against Ludmila's cage so her friend would not be exposed.
"I won't strike you when you're not looking," Nikolai said quietly. "And I propose we go elsewhere on the island. I think it better if Madame Fanina and Renata were not forced to watch. Meet me at Candlestick Point when you're finished saying your goodbyes."
Inside, Vika wilted. But outside, she merely nodded. No one before had called the peninsula at the northern tip of the island Candlestick Point. But she knew immediately what Nikolai meant. She had left Candlestick Point undeveloped when she created the island, hoping one of them would take advantage of the open space for an enchantment. Now it appeared it would be used as the field on which one of them died. Nikolai bowed to both Vika and Ludmila. Renata squeezed his hand once more, and then he spun on his heel and strode away, as if he couldn't get away from the cages, and to Candlestick Point, fast enough. He didn't give even a passing glance to his benches.
"You should go, my dear,"
Ludmila said to Vika.
"I hope for your sake it ends quickly. As do I. And I also wish it would never end."
Vika's shoulders sagged. Ludmila sighed and looped her arms around Vika, pulling her into the bars for an embrace.
I may not be your mother, but like Sergei, I have watched you grow, and I consider you my own. You are strong and smart, and however this game ends, know that you will have done me and Sergei proud. You are a wonder, Vika. I'm blessed to have had you in my life.
Ludmila sniffled, and Vika held her as tight as she could. Then Ludmila released her and retreated into the middle of her cage.
Now go. Your fate awaits. I cannot keep you from it any longer.
Renata leaned against her bars.
Be brave, she said. Both you and Nikolai.
Vika blinked back tears and nodded. Then she, like Nikolai, hurried away. She understood now that it was impossible to leave any other way. He waited for her at the end of Candlestick Point, his back to her, looking out onto the unmoving bay. His dark figure cut against the dawn light, an ominous silhouette from his top hat down to the sharp toe of his boot. Vika's feet hardly touched the gravel as she approached, but they still stirred the air around her, and it was inconceivable that Nikolai would not have heard. Yet he did not acknowledge her until she was only a few yards away. Nikolai turned to face her. The knife Galina had given him rested in his gloved hand. Vika put up a double shield. Unlike Nikolai, she hadn't put on her gloves this morning, improper as that might be. They had never before impeded her magic, but she was not taking any chances today.
How have you been? He asked. I haven't seen you in a while.
Vika narrowed her eyes. Was he actually trying to have a conversation, right here, right now? Or was it a deceptive ploy? She kept her distance.
You saw me yesterday in the palace. You ran away before we had a chance to talk. That hardly counts as seeing you. I did not run. I glided away in a sled. And I did not want to talk.
He gave her a wry smile. It might have been charming if it weren't for the dagger he twirled in his hands.
I missed you, he said.
Then he corrected himself.
I missed your enchantments.
The image of him kissing Renata flashed in Vika's mind.
It was your move. I was waiting for inspiration. But then Pasha changed the game, and I had to hold on to my turn.
Nikolai clawed distractedly at the collar of his shirt, where the brand must have been searing into his skin.
But what I wanted to say, and did not get a chance to, was that I am sorry to hear about your father's passing.
Vika was dizzy with the conversation. Nikolai hadn't even mentioned that she'd destroyed all his possessions. Were they enemies fighting a duel? Or were they friends making up for lost time? She didn't know whether to protect herself or open up to him.
Thank you. But it turns out Sergei was not my father.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That must have been quite a shock. Shock is a mighty understatement.
Nikolai scuffed the heel of his boot on the gravel.
My father also died recently, although I didn't know he was my father until after his death. Nearly the mirror opposite of your experience.
Vika blinked at Nikolai.
Oh, that's terrible. I'm sorry.
He shrugged.
I hardly knew him, but thank you.
He looked at her and held her eyes. Vika thought she saw a flicker in his, a shape like a golden eagle, like an echo of their time together on the dream step. But then Nikolai looked down at his knife, and the memory of their shared moment evaporated into tense air. The dagger gleamed.
I don't want to do this, he said.
Then don't. It's the only way.
Vika jerked back to the reality of the game. She checked her shields, and she began to pace along Candlestick Point, so as not to be too easy a target in a single static space. Who knew what that knife was capable of? Sergei's simple leather bracelet had been enough to drain his life. Surely Galina's gift would be equally as powerful, and likely much more vicious. But Nikolai did not move to aim at Vika.
"There's one more thing," he said.
"Yes?"
Vika forced herself to continue walking. If only he would hurry and make his move. If he was going to kill her, she wanted him to end it now, before her own dread choked her.
"I love you," he said.
"What?"
He smiled sadly.
"I was lost from the moment I saw you on Ovchinen Island. It took a long while for me to realize it, but it's true. I've spent my entire life scrambling to fit in and to change myself, Vika. But where I've belonged, and who I needed to be, has been right here the whole time. I love you."
Vika stood in one place, no longer pacing.
But you kissed Renata.
Nikolai shook his head.
"She's only a friend." "Are you sure?" "I've never wanted anyone but you."
Vika gasped as the invisible string that connected them pulled taut. She wanted to let it reel her in, to pull her to Nikolai and him to her. And yet, the dagger.
"Then what is the knife for?" "To end the game."
Nikolai gripped the handle, and sunlight glinted off the sharp edges of the blade. Suddenly, it seemed as if the air grew thinner, and Vika's head swam as she tried to make sense of everything Nikolai was saying, everything Vika wanted him to say, and to not say. But she had to ask.
"You love me, but you're going to kill me."
"I love you,"
Nikolai said.
"So I want you to live."
"I don't understand."
"Galina said this knife would never miss."
He pointed the dagger at his chest.
"This is my fifth move."
"No, he couldn't mean to."
"Nikolai, stop!"
Vika lunged and threw a wave of magic at him, but he was too quick. He thrust the knife deep into himself. It plunged up under his ribs on a direct path to his heart. The violence of his act pierced through Vika, and she felt as if her heart too had been impaled. Her scream split the sky and shattered the morning's remains. Chapter 69. Nikolai was still standing. He didn't feel a thing, when he should have felt the blade slicing through muscle and grating against bone, when he should have been buckling in a pool of red, when death was supposed to have come to claim him. He looked down at himself. There was no knife in his hands. What? How? And then he looked up at Vika, who had just screamed. Her eyes were wide, and a hilt protruded from her chest. Blood drenched the bodice of her dress.
"Nikolai!"
she gasped.
"Vika!"
Unlike the night along the canal, he was quick enough this time to catch her before she hit the ground. He cradled her tenderly against his body. Her breathing was already shallow. Galina had said the knife would not miss. So how? Nikolai drew in a guillotine-sharp breath. Galina. The conniving, venomous harpy. She had known before Nikolai did that his weakness, his compassion for the tiger, for the lorises, for Vika, might lead him to attempt to end the game by killing himself. So Galina had charmed the knife to hit the target she thought it ought to. Like she'd said, the knife would never miss.
"Vika! I'm so sorry. I didn't know. It was supposed to be me, not you."
She turned her head toward him, but her eyes were far away. Even the green in them seemed diluted. He pressed his fingers to her throat and felt her pulse beneath her skin. The beat faltered. Then it recovered, but the rhythm was uneven.
"What have I done? What have I done? What have I done?" "Vika, listen to me. I'll fix this. There must be some way to reverse it. You need to hold on. Hold on while I figure out how to write this."
She wheezed and more blood gushed from her wound.
"I have to close it,"
Nikolai thought. But he had never done anything like it before. Galina had trained him as a master of mechanics. But what good was shipbuilding and fabric manipulating at a time like this? And the only way she had taught him to handle life was to end it. Damn her and her blasted tigers. If only Vika could heal herself, like she did for the animals on her island. But she hadn't the strength.
"Why can't I give you mine?"
Nikolai let out a tortured wail. But why couldn't he? Sergei had channeled his energy into Vika, and Aijana had taken life from other life. Nikolai didn't know how it was done, but the fact was, it had been done. And now it was his only hope. He would have to cobble together a way how.
"I don't know how to heal you, Vika, but I'm going to try to siphon some of my energy to you. And then, I don't know. Then I hope you'll have enough strength that you can heal yourself."
She didn't respond. Nikolai squeezed his eyes shut for a second.
"Please let this work."
Then he opened them again and gritted his teeth.
"Go."
He tried to command his energy in the same way he ordinarily directed his thoughts toward objects he wanted to move.
"Go."
He waved his hands. Nothing. He pointed with his fingers. No response. He even tried blowing energy out through his mouth. To no avail.
"Go, go, go!"
Vika's head drooped in his arms. He propped her up and cradled her tighter. So close it was as if they were waltzing rather than dying. The panic rose in his chest. His own heartbeat accelerated to the speed of a mazurka. And then...
yes. Like a dance. Like my enchantment at the masquerade.
But this time, instead of the rhythm of the orchestra, it would be the rhythm of Nikolai's own heart. And instead of charming Vika's feet to follow the tune of the mazurka, he would charm her stumbling pulse to follow his stronger one. Like any good dancer, he would lead her where he needed her to go.
"Please work."
Nikolai closed his eyes. He focused on the steady beat of his heart. Ka-thump, ka-thump, ka-thump. He charmed Vika's heart next, convincing himself it was the same as charming her feet, and he channeled the rhythm of his pulse like music into her veins. Her heart tripped.
"Listen to the rhythm,"
he whispered. Ka-thump, ka-thump, ka-thump. Her heart stumbled again. "No, like this. Ka-thump, ka-thump, ka-thump." There was a pause, and then hers went. Ka-thump, ka-thump, ka-thump. The raggedness of Vika's breath smoothed a little.
"Yes." Nikolai kept his eyes closed. "Now, beat harder,"
he urged, like a conductor asking his drummers to play louder.
Ka-thump, ka-thump, ka-thump.
He felt her shift in his arms.
Ka-thump, ka-thump, ka-thump.
The frigid wind whipped around him. It was like the snow flurry of Vika's dress in the ballroom, lifting their dancing to a frenzy. Nikolai harnessed the memory of that energy. The blistering tempo of the orchestra, the rapid movements of their feet, and propelled it into Vika's body. She gasped and sat upright. Nikolai linked his arms around her and pulled her close again, There was no telling what would happen if he lost the connection with her heart.
Vika, listen. I'm going to extract the knife. But I don't know how to staunch the bleeding. So you'll have to do it. Can you manage?
He continued to listen to their rhythms as he spoke. She blinked at him twice, weakly. It was all she could muster. He would have to take that as a yes.
Don't worry. We can do this, he said,
even though he wasn't sure if it was true.
I'll keep your heart strong.
Nikolai held her tight. Then he took a deep breath and wrenched the knife from her chest. He felt the sickening give of soft flesh as he did it, and it was only because he had to keep rhythm for Vika's heart that he didn't throw up. As the blade came out, Vika shrieked, and the sound was a thousand banshees ripping Nikolai's soul apart. He trembled as he pinned down her arms to keep her from flailing. Vika's pulse stuttered, and a torrent of flesh blood surged from the wound.
We are not at death's door, he told himself. We are at Pasha's ball. Our feet are stamping and skipping, our hearts kicking and leaping. Remember the masquerade,
he whispered into Vika's ear.
Remember how we danced.
Kathump, kathump, kathump. Her heart reluctantly rejoined the mazurka. She took in saw-toothed gulps of air. Her lungs were as fragile as the unlit paper lanterns in the sky. But Nikolai would not let her heart stop dancing. And then he felt her tense against him, the muscles in her shoulders drawn back and growing strong. She doubled over again, then stretched out, twisted and unwound. She moaned and cried. He held her tight as she carried out her work. But soon Nikolai's arms began to quiver, and he was cold. So very, very cold. He had felt like this when he created the benches, and he knew he wouldn't last much longer.
Hurry,
he whispered. Vika took in a sharp inhale in response. Now her heartbeat was solid, and his was flimsy, but still he continued to pour his energy into her. Her body kept contracting and writhing and contorting against his. After what seemed an eternity, all her muscles relaxed. She collapsed against his neck and whispered,
I did it. I closed the wound.
Her voice was her own again.
You can let go now, Nikolai.
His head was cloudy, and he didn't have the strength to unlink his arms from her. So he chose instead to open his eyes. The knife was discarded by her side. She was alive. But he felt as if he were not. Vika sat up on her own. Then she let out a plaintive cry.
Nikolai!
Her hand fluttered to her mouth.
Nikolai! What have you done?
He shook his head. He didn't know. He crumpled in a heap.
At least I die with her in my arms.
Chapter 70 The Rus quill began to scratch on the scroll. Pasha's stomach turned. He grabbed the vase again. The quill had written something else earlier in the morning, not long after dawn. But Pasha had not been able to muster the courage to look at it, to see what Nikolai's first play had been. He had lain on the floor instead, waiting for Vika to make a move. The ensuing silence of the quill had been too loud. Now there was something new, and Pasha clenched his fists and forced himself to rise. Were they fighting, as Yuliana had told Pasha needed to be done? Or had Vika and Nikolai found a way around the rules of the game?
Please let it be the latter.
But deep inside, Pasha knew there was no way out other than victory for one and death for the other. He wrung his hands as he walked to his desk, dragging his feet to make the distance across the room longer. But he was there before he knew it. He hesitated before he picked up the parchment, looking around his bedroom for another excuse. Perhaps he ought to wait for Juliana. But she was occupied with entertaining the English ambassador's wife, and if Pasha waited, she would only yell at him that if he was going to be Tsar, he had better find the backbone soon to act like it. So he reached for the scroll, hands shaking. The parchment crinkled in his grasp. He didn't want to look, but there was nothing else to do. 1 December 1825. Winner. Vika Andreeva. Pasha dropped his head to his hands and sobbed. Chapter 71. 1 week after the end of the game, Vika sat on the step bench and immersed herself in the dream. Soon she would have to return to St. Petersburg to take her post as Imperial Enchanter. But for now, she watched Nikolai's Golden Eagle fly over the barren plains. It was so unfair that his benches were still here when he wasn't. And yet, it was something. So she listened to the rustle of the dry grasses, and felt the cool breeze on her face, and remembered him. Pasha had ordered an elaborate memorial service for Nikolai, but Vika hadn't attended. Despite Pasha's grief and his attempts to apologize for demanding the duel, Vika didn't want anything to do with him. At least not for now. Until he was officially installed as Tsar, and she had no choice but to serve him, Vika needed space. The wounds Pasha had inflicted were too deep and too raw. There was another reason, however, that Vika hadn't wanted to attend Nikolai's memorial. It horrified her, but she was unable to cry for him. Perhaps she had used up all her tears before the duel. Perhaps the grief was so vast, mere tears could never be adequate. Or perhaps it was that something nagged at her, and she felt he wasn't entirely gone. Nikolai had crumpled in her lap at the end of the game. But instead of the wands bursting into flame and consuming him, as she'd expected, he'd disintegrated into nothing. As if, with all his energy drained, he'd simply ceased to exist. And because he did not exist, there was no scar to alight and burn. Then Vika's own scar had vanished from her skin. The game had officially been won. But even with Nikolai gone, there had remained a heaviness in the air, a lack of finality, as if his magic still lingered. It had been impossible to attend his memorial when it felt as if something of Nikolai was still there. Here. The wind on the step whipped up, and the eagle soared on its gust. Behind Vika, someone pushed through the long grass. The footsteps on the hard-packed dirt were neither quiet nor particularly loud, as if the person could tread lighter, but wanted to be sure Vika was not startled. She turned. It was Pasha.
"I thought you might be here," he said. "I hope you don't mind me joining your dream."
Vika bit her lip, but she tilted her chin in greeting.
"It isn't mine to keep."
He lifted his gaze up to the sky. For a second, it seemed as if the eagle turned its head at Pasha and glared. But then it was back to focusing on the ground. Vika probably imagined it.
"I miss him too, you know,"
Pasha said. The emptiness in Vika's chest echoed with Nikolai's absence.
"It's no fault but your own," she said.
Pasha sighed heavily.
"I know. Trust me. I know."
Vika looked at him then, really looked at him. His face was gaunt, his blue eyes almost grey and ringed with dark circles. His hair was irretrievable chaos. He was Pasha, if Pasha were a ghost.
"If I could take it back," I would, he said. I was angry that Nikolai hadn't told me he was an enchanter. And I was irrational with grief over my parents. Then Juliana said I had to declare the duel. And she's so sure of everything, while I am so sure of nothing. So I listened. It's no excuse. I still made the decision. But I am acutely sorry for it. I didn't think it through. You didn't realize that if you demanded a duel to the death, one of us would die.
Pasha shook his head.
I did, but I didn't. I was all emotion and reaction. I wasn't thinking.
Vika frowned.
I hope you clear your head before you become Tsar. That's why I need you, Vika. I can't do this alone, or with only Juliana by my side.
The look Vika cast him was so stony, it was worthy of the Grand Princess.
I'll be your Imperial Enchanter. I committed to it in my oath to your father. But you won't be there of your own accord.
In the distance, the eagle circled in the sky, then plummeted down toward the ground. A moment later, it flapped its mighty wings and emerged from the grass with a small animal drooping from its talons. The eagle rose into the air with its prey.
Forgiveness doesn't come so easily, Vika said,
as much to herself as to Pasha. He smiled sadly, but he nodded.
I understand. But perhaps with time. Perhaps.
He swallowed.
Right. Well, I'll leave you alone then. I shall see you after I return from my coronation.
Vika glanced at him.
I will be there in Moscow. You will?
The blue in Pasha's eyes flickered through the grey.
Yes, to ensure no harm comes to you. I promised Father I would do my best to serve the Empire, and that begins with the Tsar.
Oh.
All right, I appreciate it.
Vika gave him a curt nod.
Goodbye, Your Imperial Highness.
He hesitated, as if he wanted to say more, but then bowed and retreated. There was a rustle through the grass as he awoke and exited the dream. Vika closed her eyes and rubbed her face with her hands. If only the past could be undone. But at least there was this. This dream where time was suspended. This bench bridging then and now. Vika turned her focus back to the sky. But the eagle was gone, having successfully killed its prey. She squinted at the horizon, hoping to find it again. It would be with its Berkuchi, its master. They were difficult to see at first, but eventually she made out a shadow at the mountain's base. The Berkuchi sat atop his horse, the eagle perched regally on his arm. They were camouflaged in the shade. Vika craned her neck and squinted harder. The outline of the rider sharpened, but it was not the profile of a burly Kazakh hunter, as Vika expected. It was instead the graceful silhouette of a gentleman in a top hat. She inhaled sharply. The string at Vika's chest tugged at her. The shadow turned in her direction, as if he too had felt the pull. He paused for a moment when he saw her. But then he dipped his head, like their mutual presence was no surprise at all. And he raised his hat in a distant hello. She was supposed to be invisible to the people in the dream. Vika lifted her hand to wave, her heart pounding to the beat of a mazurka. He was almost the same as he'd been at Bolshevnoi Duplo. Almost, because the shadow boy on the horse wasn't entirely there. Right now, he could only exist in this reverie. But his silhouette was identical. Vika had been right that she could still feel his presence, and she could almost hear him in the wind, invoking the words he'd once written on her armoire. Imagine, and it shall be. There are no limits.